Today is Wednesday, June 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. House votes to allow the Mueller probe lawsuits. Democratic frontrunner, former Vice President Joe Biden, unleashes criticism on President Trump.
He thinks these tariffs are being paid by China, just like he thinks Mexico is building a wall.
Also ahead, Led Zeppelin is going back to court over the lyrics of its iconic hit song, Stairway to Heaven. It's all on today's International Edition. The United Nations Children's Fund, also known as UNICEF, is reporting that at least 19 children have been killed and dozens injured in Sudan since June 3rd. The organization says it's gravely concerned about the impact of the continuing violence and unrest in the country on children and young people, and it's calling for an end to the violence. It follows reports that the military's deadly use of force against peaceful protesters and Sudan's opposition leaders have agreed to end their campaign of civil disobedience and strikes and resume talks. But they say the calls, they believe the offers are insincere given the brutality they've seen. Protest groups and opposition parties have been demanding that the TMC, which took power after the army overthrew longtime President Omar al-Bashir in April, hand power to a civilian-led authority. AfricanNews.com reports that the opposition says some of the military's targets are not just out on the streets.
Security forces in Sudan have been accused of targeting hospitals and clinics treating wounded protesters. The opposition said troops from the Rapid Support Forces unit raided a government-held agency in Khartoum that supplies medications and other care needs for patients across the country.
The problems are usually coming from our environment. Like the doctors were not able to arrive to the hospital due to the problems of the barricades that exist in the alleys. We were able to overcome them by bringing in ambulances. And at the end, our aim is to make this work properly. We are in a location that does not bear any mistake. So we are doing our very best so that the patients can receive full care and medication.
But head of the National Medicine Agency denies the allegation.
We're delivering medicine for any person, even the protesters. We do not differentiate between parties. We respect the Sudanese citizens, whatever their views are, and we are delivering their needs without any bias to any party or sect.
The accusation follows last week's violent crackdown on opposition protesters who had been staged in a sit-in outside military headquarters in Khartoum. Sudanese hospitals were working to full capacity after the crackdown, which left more than 100 people dead and hundreds injured, the opposition says.
Well, members of the UN Security Council have strongly condemned recent violence in Sudan and called for the immediate cessation of violence against civilians. The U.S. House of Representatives is moving forward with its Russia probe and has now passed a resolution to make it easier to take court action against members of President Trump's administration who refuse to comply with subpoenas. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The yeas are 229. And the nays are 191.
This resolution gives Democrats more teeth to take legal action to enforce subpoenas against key players in their investigation, like Attorney General William Barr and former White House counsel Don McGahn. Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler says President Trump has been ignoring their subpoenas and oversight.
Despite the continued stonewalling, delay tactics, and distraction by Trump and the administration, we will move forward with holding this president accountable.
California's Maxine Waters says the president isn't above the law.
Who does this president think he is? He carries on like a dictator or a crime boss.
But House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy thinks the rule change on civil court action is the wrong way to go.
They're changing the rules of the House simply because they cannot win.
Democrats say they hope to receive the documents without having to go to court. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Joining us now for more on this and to talk about how unprecedented Congress's moves are to fight these obstruction of the subpoenas is criminal defense attorney Jack Rice. Jack, what's this? What's going on here? It would almost appear, though, from the outside that this thing has gone on for so long that the public has sort of grown weary of the whole thing after all that anticipation about the Mueller report and what might come out of it. It doesn't look like there is accountability.
I think the Trump administration has done a very, very good job at getting the American public to be so befuddled by this that they almost either don't care, don't understand, or are bored by it. And the real problem is this is about something fundamentally different. This is about governmental corruption and the obligation to fulfill your roles as part of that government. And right now, this is not a left or right question. This is not about going after this Republican president or standing up with that Democratic Congress. It's about roles, and those have to be played.
What did they hope to achieve by getting these witnesses, such as former White House communications director to President Trump, Hope Hicks, and his former White House counsel, Don McGahn, who have all basically defied the subpoenas, which we've never seen, but the White House is telling them to do this. What do Democrats hope to get from these witnesses that they can't do without them?
What seems very clear from the Mueller report is they did not deal with the issue of obstruction, and that what was necessary here is that this was the role of Congress. The rule with the Justice Department is that they could not, no matter what, indict a sitting president. And as a result of that, this has been placed into the hands of Congress, and Congress has a constitutional obligation to look at this issue. This is critically important for Republicans in the room, because if they wave on this issue, there will be another president who is a Democrat down the road. I wonder if they would sit on their hands then, and I don't think that either side, any party, should be doing that at this point. If there's a determination that there was an obstruction, fine, make the determination, but this is something that Congress has to be doing. It is their constitutional obligation.
Right. And of course, we know that from the Mueller report that Russia interfered in our democracy and our elections, and that they apparently are continuing to do so. And so far, it doesn't look like the administration wants to take that on or even try to stop it from happening again.
It's a huge concern for the intelligence community and frankly for the average American citizen. What we can say with absolute certainty is that the Russians absolutely tried to interfere with and influence our 2016 election and frankly our 2018 election. And it's likely, and this is, I would say, a fact, they will do the same in 2020 and onward and onward. We do have an obligation to look at this issue. This is not a witch hunt. And just because the president wants to slap a label on it, in this case, honestly, that's a lie. And I'll use the word specifically. It's a lie when you call that a witch hunt, because what the Russians did is real and purposeful.
All right, that's criminal defense attorney Jack Rice. U.S. President Donald Trump and the opposition party frontrunner Joe Biden are seeking to unseat him next year. On Election Day, they were both on the campaign trail at a key political state of Iowa Tuesday in what looks like it could be a preview of a head-to-head matchup between the two more than 500 days before the general election. Zlatica Hoke reports.
During his Tuesday events in Iowa, Trump clearly had the 2020 presidential election in mind. The Republican president, who is expected to run for re-election, took every opportunity to undermine the record of the Obama administration and scorn former Vice President Biden.
America must never again be held hostage to foreign suppliers of energy as we were under the Obama-Biden Sleepy Joe group. Sleepy Joe.
Trump's top argument in his favor has been the U.S. economic growth, but his tariff policies have hurt U.S. farmers and some manufacturers, sparking concern that the economy could take a downturn. Trump insisted that U.S. farmers benefit from the tariffs.
We are taking in billions, and out of those billions that were taken in tariffs, we gave the farmer $16 billion because that was the highest amount that China had ever used to purchase your product.
Earlier in the day, Trump posted a barrage of tweets expressing confidence in his re-election, including a recent approval rating, which was close to 50%, according to the Rasmussen report. However, a Quinnipiac University survey published Tuesday showed Biden leading Trump by 13 points nationally. Biden began his two-day visit to Iowa earlier Tuesday, targeting Trump's leadership style.
I think he's genuinely a threat to our core values. And he's a threat to our standing in the world. On the D-Day ceremonies, it was astounding to me that he was tweeting attacks on everybody, from the mayor of London to Bette Midler.
The Democratic presidential frontrunner also contradicted Trump's claims on tariffs.
The fact is, he backed off this threat on tariffs with Mexico lately because He realized that he was likely to lose Michigan, Ohio, and Iowa. All of a sudden, he has, as we say in Southern Delaware, had an altar call. He's seen the Lord. But make no mistake, if in fact things get tough again, he's going to start to threaten tariffs again. To him, American workers, in my view, are just a pawn. They're pawns in his game.
For now, Biden and Trump are frontrunners of their respective parties in the next presidential race. But November 2020 is still far away, and the 2016 election showed that last-minute surprises cannot be ruled out. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. The U.S. Justice Department presses the U.K. to extradite WikiLeaks founder to the U.S. Is ISIS gaining a foothold in Mozambique? In Russia, journalism is a dangerous business. And how climate change impacts your morning coffee? Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Hong Kong witnessed the largest protest since the city was handed back to China from British control in 1997 over a contentious bill that would allow extraditions to mainland China. A 1992 U.S. law known as the Hong Kong Policy Act recognizes Hong Kong separate from China, including matters of trade and economics. VOA's Anna Cook spoke to Hong Kong expert Michael Davis, a global fellow at the Wilson Center, on how the extradition law, if passed, may affect the relationship between the U.S., China, and Hong Kong.
It threatens to extradite people from Hong Kong to face criminal justice. And under the Hong Kong guarantees of, in the Sino-British Treaty and the Basic Law, Hong Kong is supposed to be a separate system. And the rights of Hong Kong people are to be protected under the Bill of Rights, which is really the international treaty. The other way that it threatens is less obvious to people, and that is what we have is a Hong Kong government that seems to be doing Beijing's bidding here. And this, unfortunately, has been the character of the Hong Kong government for many years, that it's generally seen in Hong Kong to represent Beijing more than to represent the people of Hong Kong, which under an autonomy arrangement should be the case. The Hong Kong people are also highly invested here. You know, mm-hmm. their livelihood, and you know, and over the years, before the Sino-British Treaty was signed and before the Basic Law, there was a lot of immigration out of Hong Kong. The government in Hong Kong and Beijing, the governments, both governments, are tone deaf and not willing to listen to the concerns of Hong Kong, I fear that on the horizon we will see again immigration out of Hong Kong.
Why does the U.S. care about this?
The U.S. has 85,000 Americans in Hong Kong that are there in all sorts of capacities, doing business and so on. Hong Kong offers a kind of rule of law, open society venue for doing business in China. So those people in Hong Kong now are subject to the risk that they will be extradited. And this is not just an imaginary risk, because the Chinese approach to business is often involves when outsiders come and do business in a local area in China, that they can be harassed with prosecution and so on. And the second is, I think U.S. is just invested in Hong Kong generally. that basically the U.S. relationship with Hong Kong is separated from that with mainland China because of the promise of one country, two systems. So that is the premise for treating Hong Kong separately. When it comes to intellectual property, it treats Hong Kong distinctly as well. But now there was concern expressed in this congressional commission that intellectual property might be at risk in Hong Kong.
You know, in terms of doing business or in politics, how is the U.S.'s relationship different to Hong Kong than to China? And why is that important to sustain?
Well, it's very simple. I mean, China itself has orchestrated this through its one country, two systems policy. It was inviting countries to treat Hong Kong separately because Hong Kong has the rule of law. It's an open society, it has a free press, all of these kinds of things that the world's democracies have. And so they were told that they could rely on it. So that it's just absolutely different.
What does this mean or symbolize about how China is exerting its power beyond its borders?
Well, I think it does kind of send a signal, you know, basis for caution in dealing with China, that if China's presence grows strong, that it may assert, you know, its authority over those neighbors in ways they don't like. So there's a kind of nervousness in general about doing business with China. Well, if Hong Kong, the commitments to Hong Kong are undermined, because the Hong Kong commitments were at a much higher level, guaranteeing all of these, you know, free trade and rule of law and all of that. If that's undermined, I don't think it helps China's image at all across the region, especially in Southeast Asia.
All right, that's Michael Davis, a Hong Kong expert and a global fellow at the Wilson Center. The reintroduction of American gray wolves to part of their historical range has been one of the great conservation success stories in the United States. But there are other wolf species in America, and their stories may not have a happy ending. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
The Mexican wolves once roamed freely through the southwestern United States and Mexico. It is one of two U.S. wolf species dangerously close to extinction.
So the Mexican wolf and the American red wolf are the two most endangered wolves in the world. The Mexican wolf has about 150 individuals out in the wild, mostly found in the United States, in Arizona and Mexico. The red wolf is unfortunately worse. They have about 30 individuals left in the wild.
These 30 red wolves live in protected parkland in the eastern state of North Carolina. Their numbers remain small in spite of a determined effort to breed and release these wolves back into the wild.
The red wolf was released in 1987. It was the first time in history anybody had released a large carnivore back onto the landscape to try and save an endangered species. And for many decades, it was going really well.
However, opposition to the effort hurt the recovery plan, and the red wolf once again faces extinction in the wild. It was also going well for the Mexican wolf. In a crafty move, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service began placing captive-born cubs into already established wolf families.
We actually take puppies that are born at our center that are just maybe 1 to 2 weeks old, so itty-bitty, it can fit in the palm of your hand. We fly them down to the recovery area in New Mexico and Arizona, and based on the GPS collar of the wild wolves, we can tell where the wild wolf mom denned, and we sneak our puppies into that wild wolf den. She raises them as her own, so it gives them a greater chance of surviving.
But lately, things aren't going so well for the Mexican wolf because it is being hunted illegally.
Poaching's still an issue. And with the Mexican wolf, we have seen almost 70% of the wolves that have been released since the recovery program started in 1998 have died because of human-related causes.
Wildlife officials are working with local residents to protect Mexican wolves from being shot. With some 6,000 gray wolves now roaming the western U.S., the Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed removing its federal protected status to let states manage those packs. But officials say these iconic apex predators are vital to maintaining balance in local ecosystems and will continue their efforts to create healthy populations of Mexican and red wolves. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
VOA's International Edition continues. A new Shaft movie with Samuel L. Jackson that features three generations of the main character is out. Joining us now for a review on that and also of a new HBO series that's getting a lot of attention is Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. So, Jeff, let's start with Shaft.
Samuel Jackson is back playing the iconic character of Shaft. It's been well over 10 years since his last movie. And this time, right, we have three generations of the character in the movie. We find out that at the very beginning of the film, it does a flashback to the 1980s, that Shaft had a girlfriend played by Regina Hall, his wife, actually, and they had a baby boy. But she could not take his street cop stuff anymore with the drug dealers and the violence thing. So she says, look, I have had enough of this. I'm taking the baby. I'm leaving. And they do like a montage in the opening credits of his son, Shaft Jr., growing up, getting Christmas presents and birthday presents. But he grows up completely different from his father, from Shaft, because he went to MIT. He's a data analyst for the FBI. But of course, he's now needs his father's help. One of his friends died from a drug overdose, but he suspects foul play. And so he goes to his father and says, look, you know, I know we've had our differences. You weren't there for me. You left me when I was a child, but I need your help now. So they do this investigation where it involves drug dealers and car chases and gunfights. But in the final segment, they need one more person to help them beat the bad guys, Richard Roundtree, the original Shaft from the 1970s. So we have three generations of Shaft. Now, what is unique about this new film is that director Tim Story made it a comedy. I mean, it felt like Beverly Hills Cop. It felt like a 1980s movie with all the dialogue. Yeah. So the original Shaft and all the others, they were hard-hitting, gritty, blaxploitation cop films. But this is, he's sexist, he's misogynistic, he's racist. It is so politically incorrect, and the audiences were eating it up. They were all laughing. So I was really shocked to see that the new Shaft is a comedy. It felt very 80s. I think it'll find its audience, though.
Interesting that you can sort of do a remake of something and change it up that much.
That's what surprised me about it. But you know what? Everybody was laughing every 10 minutes. So Samuel Jackson owns that character. He owns that movie. And I think it's going to do pretty good.
All right. Then we've got a new HBO series coming up, Chernobyl, that sounds like it's going to be huge.
It is. And, you know, I was about 19 when Chernobyl happened, the nuclear disaster in the Soviet Union. The end of the Cold War was happening, Gorbachev and Perestroika. And this miniseries from Craig Mazin stars Jared Harris as a nuclear physicist and Stellan Skarsgård as the Russian Ministry of Energy. They made all kinds of errors in the nuclear power plant. It wasn't a meltdown. It exploded. And it was due because the Soviet Union kept secrets from the nuclear power plant operators. And so we had one of the worst nuclear disaster ever in human history. And when you watch this miniseries, it shows how the efforts that the Soviet Union went to keeping all the information from its people, from the world, even from the first responders, from the firemen to the miners. We almost had a disaster, even though what happened was bad enough, but we almost had a nuclear meltdown where it would have contaminated the water and most of Asia and Europe would have been uninhabitable for thousands of years. So as I'm watching this miniseries, my heart is racing because it's a thriller, but it's just about how life was going to change radically just 30 years ago. So you watch this miniseries with the Soviet Union lying to people, the deceit, and even though they know what to do, the right thing to do, their pride and how Russia can never make any mistakes was more important than saving its own people or saving the planet. So this is a hard-hitting documentary, makes you love your democracy. And after watching this, I can't believe we still have nuclear power. And here in Las Vegas, Vegas, you know, we're fighting the power plant, the nuclear storage dump here at Yucca Mountain. You know, President Trump's trying to restart that again, but we feel, hey, you're going to make this garbage, keep it in your own backyard. But after watching this miniseries, I can't imagine anyone who is not going to embrace democracy and be against nuclear power.
You know what's fascinating? I'm seeing on social media that, strangely, I don't know if it's related to the film, the people are flocking to the site of the Chernobyl disaster and taking selfies now.
Yeah, that's what happens is, you know, the whole area is irradiated. You can't go there. You can only go there for a little bit without getting a fatal dose of radiation. They entombed the reactor in a giant concrete block up to like 2-3 years ago. So yeah, there's even a whole thing they made where people, you know, have guides, tour guides, give you tours of Chernobyl. It's really dangerous to visit there because the radiation is still very potent, but people are stupid enough to get tour guides to take them around Chernobyl. It's extremely dangerous. People are haphazard. They even made a horror film a few years ago about Americans who visited Chernobyl. So it's not something to laugh at or to mock up. It's a pretty serious issue.
So, Jeff, how do people see the HBO series Chernobyl?
Well,
is it out?
Yes, it's out now. I binge-watched it. I watched all 5 episodes. I couldn't stop. You can watch it if you subscribe to HBO on your cable provider, or you can go online and get it on HBO Go and watch it on demand. And please watch it because it's something everyone's going to be talking about. And not only that, it's just incredible television.
All right, Jeffrey K. Howard, you can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. Stairway to Heaven will get another hearing, this time to a packed house. A panel of 11 judges from the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals agreed on Monday to hear Led Zeppelin's appeal in a copyright lawsuit alleging the group stole its 1971 rock epic from an obscure 1960s instrumental. In 2016, a trial that included testimony from guitarist Jimmy Page and singer Robert Plant, the jury found that Stairway to Heaven didn't significantly remember the song called Taurus, written by the late Randy Wolf. Page said he wrote the music for the song and Plant the lyrics, and both were original. But then in September, another 3-judge panel from the 9th Circuit ruled that the judge at the trial before had failed to advise the jury properly, and he ordered a new one. So the judges then unanimously found the trial judge was wrong, told jurors that individual elements of the song, like notes or scale, might not qualify for copyright protection. Led Zeppelin's lawyers have moved to the next level now of appeal, asking for the larger group of judges to rehear the case, and the request was granted. That 11-judge panel will hear the case in late September in San Francisco, California. There's a sign on the wall, but she wants to be sure, 'cause you know sometimes words have... You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day. There's a fear.